Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the court from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank Retalk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the Creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic: white people calling the police on blacks for what? Some white people are calling the police on black people because they are fearful, uncomfortable, or suspicious. Is it indicative of a rise in racial fear, more media coverage of racial fear, or both? Maybe they don't fear blacks, but simply do not want them to be where they are. First, from Provocative Thought, PT would like to recognize that not all white people or Caucasians hate, fear, or have a debased perception of African Americans. All Caucasians do not behave in ways that place African Americans at great risk. You are much appreciated. Historically speaking, who has the history of being the victim of enslavement, lynching, raping, murdered, falsely accused, kidnapped, unjustly imprisoned, tortured, crowed, and debased? Who? Of course, it's the so-called African American or black people. It would be logical for black people to be afraid, no, terrified of white people, based on the cruelty of their tragic history with Europeans from Africa to the Americas. Yet, somehow there appears to be a consistent theme of some white people being fearful, uncomfortable, and suspicious of black people, thus calling the police to address their concern. To add salt to injury, in some instances, police are no better than the people who make the call on people who appear to be guilty of simply being black. This is for your information from the Los Angeles Times. The vast majority of homicide victims are killed by people of their own race. People tend to kill who they know. That means who you live in close proximity to, y'all. From Vox, updated in 2015. According to the FBI's most recent homicide statistics, is that the United States is in a wake of an epidemic of white-on-white crime. The United States is in the wake of an epidemic white-on-white crime. Back in 2011, the most recent year for which data was available, a staggering 83% of white murder victims were killed by fellow Caucasians. This is not to say that white people are inherently prone to violence. Most whites obviously manage to get through life without murdering anyone. Atlantic Black Star, Mr. Curtis Bunn, said FBI data from 2010, whites killed whites 3,250 times, which was 4.6 times more than the number of whites killed by blacks. The Bureau of Justice Statistics found that compared to blacks, whites were more likely to kill children, the elderly, family members, and their significant others. They commit more sex-related crimes, gang-related crimes, and are more likely to kill at their places of employment. FBI stats. Women committed 36% of the murders committed by white people against white people. Gang killings. When gang-related killings were referred to on the news, they treated as an almost exclusively black problem. However, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, for the period of 1980 to 2008, the majority, 53.3% of gang homicides were committed by white offenders, and the majority of gang homicide victims, 56.5%, were white. Now, PT's, you know, like, wow. A white-on-white homicide crime epidemic. So why the apprehension towards black people? Well, Mr. Mike Mills says white people should be more afraid of other whites than they are of people of color. He says, overall, white Americans who live in predominantly white and Trump voting countries are 50% more likely to die from murder, gun violence, and drug overdoses than whites who live in the most diverse and Democratic voting counties. The more white and Republican a county is, the greater the risk for white Americans. I thought that was odd, but that's this guy's research. Whites are so much safer where there are fewer whites and Republicans. In fact, that it raises the question of what exactly underlines this strong correlation between white safety and voting patterns. But we're not going into that right there, voting patterns. Why do white people feel entitled to police black people? The Root, Monique Judge, this guy by the name of Tolles, returned home and was stopped by his neighbor, now identified as Hillary Brooke Mueller, as he attempted to enter his building. The incident is documented on video, and he shared it on Facebook. Mueller blocked him from entering and demanded to he show proof that he lived there. This is another resident. She demanded to know that what apartment he lived in. He asked her, "Can you please move, ma'am?" She said, "I can. Do you live here?" She asked in response. They went back and forth for a few minutes with her, you know, do you live here? You know, her blocking him and repeatedly demanding to know what unit he lived in. And he informed her that he didn't have to give her that information because she might be the killer. She could be the stalker. Anyway, Mueller told that she was uncomfortable with letting him into the building. Tolles calmly and patiently explained to her that he does not have to identify himself and continued to ask her to move out of his way so he could get, you know, to his apartment. At one point, she said she won't let him in because he doesn't have a key fob. He produces key fob and shows it to her. Still, she denies him entry. "If you want to come into my building," Mueller begins, to which Tolles cut her off and told her, "It's not your building. You just live here." Eventually, Tolles moves past her and tells her she is free to call the police, do whatever she wants to do. So you know what Mueller did. She followed Tolles to his apartment. She got on the elevator with him and demanded to know who he is going up on the fourth floor to see. She got off the elevator to make his way. He got off the elevator to make his way to his apartment, and she continued to follow and harass him, demanding to know where he was going and who was he going to see. When she realized Tolles was using a key to enter his own apartment, she slightly changed her tune and said that if he does live there, she would like to introduce herself as a neighbor. Tolles told her she started things off on the wrong foot and informed her that he wants no dealings with her. He goes into his apartment, presumes minds his own business, and goes on with his evening. So Heather apparently still called the police on him. She clearly told a compelling story to the cops about the big, bad black man minding his own business in his apartment after having been harassed for several minutes as he just tried to go home, because according to Tolles, they showed up at his door 30 minutes later. Now, she knows this guy lives here, and she still called the police on him. So according to the New York Times, Tolles said the responding officer told him Mueller felt uncomfortable about him being in the building. You know, that's pretty scary, Batman in the building. Okay. So he let the officer know that he was a tenant of the apartment, and the officer left without citing anyone. Here's an important thing to note, they said. Not only did Heather call the police, but she actually called 911, that's the emergency line, and told the dispatcher that she wasn't sure if Tolles was a tenant of the building or not. Now, a provocative thought question to this is, shouldn't Heather be charged with a racial intimidation, harassing, stalking Tolles, and filing a false police complaint? That seems like nothing happened. Because in order for her to know where this guy lived at, she had to know that he lived there. Therefore, why would she not be sure that he lived in the building or not? He had a key, and he went into the building, and she tried to introduce herself as a, you know, resident, as a, you know, neighbor. Anyway, Michael Harrod. I'm going to cite some other incidents where this whole kind of a thing is going on, which is, I don't know if it's just because of this, you know, we got all this media coverage on things now that seem to be more of things than not. But here you go. Brooklyn Becky. Cops call on suspicious-looking black woman waiting for Uber in the rain. Darcell Obregon was standing in the cop caller's doorway to escape the rain while waiting for an Uber to arrive, stating, "I obviously do not know her, and that's why I want her off my property." She called the police. Okay, maybe she's trespassing. I don't know. She was afraid. Black lady standing up close in her doorway. Maybe could be trying to break in. Who knows, right? Paul Blart, pool cop fired after calling police on woman for swimming in her own pool. This lady lives in a gated community. She just happened to be, as you about to figure out, African American, black. She planned to take a swim in the pool, and this guy called the police on her. The rent a cop. He called the police on her, so I guess she could not possibly live there. You know, so what is she doing in the pool? That's what he thought. Babysitting while black. White woman calls police on black man riding around with white kids. And I saw the YouTube thing on. Was it a YouTube or something? I saw something on this. You know, an unnamed woman saw Lewis, who is black, suspiciously riding around with two non-black children. That would be Caucasian in this case. She approached Lewis and asked him if the children were okay because, hey, those two white kids with that black man, that looks like a dangerous situation. Replied that they were. She asked if she could speak with the children herself. Lewis declined, citing an ancient African maxim. "I don't even know you like that." Like, you know. So she followed Lewis to his home, and she called the police. So the police got there, you know, the kids say, "He's babysitting us," the oldest child tells the officer. And this lady started following us. Now she from the wherever they were at, harassing this guy, you know, following them, just assumed that the kids were in danger. They didn't even look like they was in distress, and they were saying that this guy's babysitting. So the lady stated, the girl explains, as the cop repeatedly asked the children if they were okay. The cop repeatedly asked the children if they're all right. Then the girl, the oldest child, saying, "He's babysitting us. He's babysitting us." The cop is saying, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" Now, what kind of police work is that in the first place? You know, I mean, like, the kids don't even look like they're in distress. I guess, you know, white guy with black kids, that's a distressful situation there, you know, for people who are looking at it. That, you know, for some white folks, that might be a distressful situation for them, you know. So the brother got harassed and stalked. Seems like nothing happened with this lady. Nothing. And I'm talking about the lady that harassed and stalked the brother with the two children. Here we go, another one. We got a white woman who called security on suspicious man with a baby at park in Washington, D.C. Now, I guess y'all probably already know this story, what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. Sherman is a dark-skinned man. He's a dark-skinned man, while his son is not. So he's walking in a park in Washington, D.C. with his baby, who I saw the picture. I saw this one. The baby was very light-skinned, skinned it. And that's his baby, though. Perhaps prompting a woman to think that the black man somehow stole a white baby. Is there any historically a black guy ever steal a white baby? You know, and this took him for a walk in some park. Even at that, like, yo, I mean, guy can't walk in a park with his own kid. She called the police on him. And so, the guys came and they pulled up and asked him, told him about the scenario, the lady said. But, why are you calling cops on this guy? He's strolling down the street, baby in a stroller, baby don't look like baby's in distress. The man doesn't look like he's in any kind of distress or he's deranged. Oh, but maybe the big black man is just caused distress with the white woman. I don't know. This is so bizarre. Because it's almost like, what time are we living in? Because this whole thing about light-skinned black people and black people, African-Americans having children with Caucasians, that it's not a new thing. That's been going on forever. Maybe some people don't like it. Maybe you see more people being up front with it and in out open with that in those relationships and willing to have children in out of those relationships, even though some people may criticize, hate, or whatever it is about that type of thing. But come on now, what time is it? We see a African-American see a black man with a light-skinned baby, we do not think that he stole that baby. Oh, I got a caller. Welcome to Provocative Thought.
Hey, what's up, Polo? It's Q.
Polo, Q.
I just wanted to say, these are the same people that are sitting on these jewelries and, dismissing or finding police officers not guilty or finding innocent black people who are murdered. They must have been guilty or something, So.
Right.
That's why they had to be shot,
Right.
These are the same people
right.
sitting on the jury in Florida and stuff and found that man was stalking that kid and pulling out his firearm and shooting him later.
Right.
It's
bizarre.
Right.
It's bizarre.
And they act like they don't know what's going on. How come these the NFL players are taking a knee and all that kind of stuff. And
right.
all of that is the same thing. It's all the same issue.
Yeah, that's a good point, because, jewelry of your peers, you can forget about that anyway. But like you just said, like these people that are on these drawers and making these decisions. And on top of that, it could be some of the attorneys and the judges.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just to bring it full circle, could be the police. Some of the police, some of the jurors, the attorneys, both sides, and the judge.
Mm-hmm.
It could be what is this? Why? How did the black guy get to be the number one criminal in the United States? When I just read some statistics to you, and that says that white people kill the lion's share of homicides of white people. People kill who they live around.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, what's that all about? What's the fear of black people? Or maybe it's not a fear at all, as I previously stated. Maybe they don't fear black people. They don't like them, and they don't want them to be in a at the same, perceived to be at the same level as them. So they don't want them to think that they belong in the same place as them. Oh, no, he's in the pool, you know what I mean? So get that, mm-hmm. you know, out of the pool. What? Who just moved around here? What? There goes the neighborhood. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's that kind of a thing. But, you know, from the statistics, you know, it seems like Caucasians are doing a lot of homicides and murders and things like that. But it's the media not covering it as much as it's covering, you know, black folks.
Right.
So, you know, it's like they have black on black crime. We got white on white crime also. Documented.
That's
you know,
right.
Not publicized. Not as publicized, but it's as documented as black-on-black crime, but not as publicized. So the question
right.
is, you know, what's going on? What's going on here? That, you know, we have to, that, you know, like, oh, okay, what we got here? Why would somebody not publicize white-on-white crime? Don't you want white people to be safe? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah, you know. Then we had this latest incident where this white woman called the police on a little black boy. He don't even know what she called him on. You know what I'm saying? I think it was 9 years
yeah.
old for sexual assault. His book bag hit her, brushed by her or something. You know?
Yeah.
And, whoa. Now, you know, the last time a white woman cried out about a young black guy, last time we heard something like that, the most famous case of that was
mm-hmm.
back in 1955.
Right.
So it's reminiscent of Emmett Till. You know, this child was
right.
not lynched, but this kid psychologically was lynched. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. He's
yeah.
a little damaged from that.
Yeah. He's traumatized.
Traumatized.
You know, yeah, he's traumatized. You know, I heard that the lady later on apologized. Another white lady went after that lady for calling the police on this kid. And then later on, after that incident happened, a lady probably was there, saw it, and went after that lady and chew her up about that. Another white lady. You know what I'm saying? But
I
heard the lady yeah. Well, I read that. And I heard the lady try to apologize. And, you know, the kid is damaged for life. Because you shouldn't do that to a child.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So that's very reminiscent of Emmett Till. You know, if all it takes is for some white person to be fearful, uncomfortable about an African-American or a black person, that presents a much bigger problem for African-Americans than just what you just talked about, right? And you know, especially if that Caucasian is an officer of the law, because not only are you at risk in a courtroom setting, because you might not make it to the courtroom setting. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because that might be one of the a contributor, you know, not the sole contributor, but a contributor to these unarmed black men getting shot. You know what I'm saying? Even so, for the armed guys getting shot. You know, I heard with a guy today, he shot about 4 cops, killed 8 people in the synagogue.
What?
Yeah,
no.
A guy today. And look, they arrested that guy. I don't know how I don't know how they did that. And I'm not saying they should have killed him, but I'm saying it's amazing how that guy was able to survive that. Remember the guy
right.
that shot the cops in Texas? He's dead. The other guy that shot the cops, I forget where he at. He died too, the young boy. He was a Marine. But this guy, he went to synagogue, shot some innocent people up with a, AR-15?
Mm-hmm.
And had a shootout with the police, shot like 4 police officers.
Die.
But he's not dead. So,
wow.
You know, I thought that was interesting. But back to what we're talking about. But that's relative to what I'm saying though, because maybe that has an impact on how people view people. Because even a white guy that's doing something that's wrong or evil is perceived different than a black guy that might be doing something, you know, right or wrong. You understand what I'm saying? That's what I'm trying to get to. So
well,
that might contribute to them being murdered on the street.
Right. Because if it's a black guy, like, playing at the playground with a toy gun, he got to be taken down before you ask him any questions. That's where they perceive that.
Got to. That's right. They killed a kid, Tamar. What was his name? Tamar? Something like that. He had a plastic gun. Cop pulled up right near him and gunned him down. I think he was 12 or 14 years old.
Right.
And of course, these are individual police officers. We understand that. But, you know, just making a point here. What's the kid's name? He went to the church, killed these people that treated him good, accepted him, you know.
Right.
Forget
right,
his name.
In Carolina.
Right.
I forget his name.
Hey, he didn't get a scratch on him, and he got taken to McDonald's, I think. See if he wanted something to eat. That's what I heard. I heard it took him to McDonald's or something. You know, so.
Wow.
I hope that's a nasty rumor, though. Because I've never heard of anybody being under arrest, being taken anywhere but the jail.
Right.
But then, who am I? You know what I'm saying? I don't know what goes on anyway. You know what I'm saying? I don't know everything. But I know the procedure. You're under arrest, you get into that truck, that car, that wagon, then you go straight to jail. There's no trip to McDonald's or your mother's house or nothing like that. That's what I'm saying. So they may drop some people off somewhere and beat the hell out of them. That's been done. You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, last time I looked, Evil had no particular ethnicity, occupation, or gender. When in the company or eye of some white people, seems like African Americans need to be apprehensive. You know, so that's up to you folks. So, you know, I ain't saying you need to be scared, brothers and sisters, but y'all need to be you know, I mean, this brother was going home, so it was no way he could get out of it. Mr. Tolles, or whatever his name is. He was on his way home. You know what I'm saying? Tolles. He was on his way home, so it was no getting away from that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a guy was walking down the street, somebody called the police on him. How is he,
right.
You can't even, I don't even know. I don't have a solution to this. You know what I'm saying? That's something that some people have to deal with, you know, within themselves, because there's little to no interaction. You know what I'm saying? Going on with that. So, I want to remind everybody, you called us. If you want to speak, please press the number 1. This is from The Movement by Chauncey Alcorn. It says, the white Maple Heights, Ohio couple that called 9/11. 9/11, that's an emergency, right? That's like, yo, you know what I mean? We got to, right?
Right.
That's going on, right?
Right.
Right,
yeah, right
he
away.
Called 9/11 on an adolescent black boy for mistakenly mowing part of their lawn 11 days ago, called the police on the same boy once again on the 4th of July. The kids and the kids' guests, including this little kid, allegedly slamming into their fence while using a makeshift slip and slide. 9/11, y'all.
Mm.
You know, I'm just saying, if I had Marvin Gaye's song, I'd be playing it right now. What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's from Ashley Atwell from Blavity. The woman, now known as Pool Patty, says she called the police after she asked a black woman to talk to her because she was depressed, and the woman refused. Then, in a move straight out of elementary school, she accused the group of picking on her. Police on them. But this cop didn't believe it. And that, you know, cop did not believe that.
Right.
You know, but, I mean, you know, this is ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? This is, 9/11 is a serious, that's a serious call. You know, it should come with some sense of urgency. And if you're calling somebody over some BS on a 9/11 call, there should be a penalty for that. You know what I'm saying? A fine or something. You know what I'm saying? 9/11. This is from Rachel Garland from the Scary Mommy. She said, white folks should stop calling the cops on black people for stupid. All right? 19-year-old. Here's some more stuff. It's a 19-year-old Trayvon Christian was arrested for buying. You hear this? Arrested. 19-year-old Trayvon Christian was arrested for buying a $350 belt in New York because he was questioned how a young black male could afford to purchase an expensive belt. Christian had worked a part-time job and saved his paycheck for several weeks to make his purchase. He got arrested. This is, come on now. Are we, what time are we living in?
What's the charge? I don't understand what the charge is for that.
What is the charge? How could he get arrested for buying a belt for $350? Here's another one. 22-year-old John Crawford III was shot and killed by police in an Ohio Walmart. I've seen this one. For holding a BB gun, which was store merchandise, in just a matter of seconds after being approached. And that's what I'm saying about that whole idea. You know what I'm saying? If you have a preconceived notion or fear or apprehension about someone, you probably place that person at risk. You're putting yourself at risk, too. I mean, how many people want to kill people? We have another caller. Hold on. Pull it over. Let me see. We have some technical. Hold on, 3103. I don't know what's happening. Can't get you. See if I can pull you on this side. Okay, here you go. 3103. Welcome to Provocative Thought.
Yes,
hello?
Sir. How you doing? Then? Yes, thanks for taking
how
my call.
Doing? Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask. I don't know if you've been noticing, because you know we got a lot of like political things going on. You know, we got the midterm elections coming up, and I noticed that a lot of people have been throwing out this word bigot or bigotry. A lot in talking about certain people, like, and I noticed a lot of it comes from people who will be liberal or homosexual or part of the whole LGBT movement and all that. And I'm just wondering, have you ever wondered how, and this is something I just, because I'm in the middle, so I just observe things, but I notice how people on the left get to redefine words and then like throw out a word that means something else, but then use it in a different way and get away with it. You get what I'm saying?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because like
I understand that
the word bigotry, right? So the word bigotry, for those who don't know, liberals use it to like say, for example, if you think that homosexuality is immoral, or if you say, for example, let's say you just disagree with a liberal on a certain point, they'll say, oh, you're being a bigot or you're engaging in bigotry. But the word, the definition of the word bigot is just is being not tolerant to someone who has a different view than you, or basically disagreeing with someone.
Right.
And so the left are the biggest bigots on the planet, and it's incredible. Like they're the biggest hypocrites in the country, because they're running around telling everybody you're not tolerant, you're being a bigot, while they're the biggest bigots in the country. I'm surrounded by liberals where I live, and all they talk about is Trump. They talk about Republicans. They talk about Christians. They talk about people who are anti-gay. I hear this nonsense all day, every day, at work, at school, everywhere I go. And I'm just like, you guys, you're the biggest hypocrites I've ever seen. And no one ever calls them on it.
Right. You're saying they're hypocrites because they are being bigoted by their comments, right?
Right. Like they're not living to the standard that they're holding other people to.
Right. Okay. So that's the – okay. So what do you say when you are you talking to somebody and that's happening, or you just hearing that?
No, I mean, I hear it every day because, I mean, I live in a state that's a lot of liberals and a lot of Democrats. And, you know, with the whole midterm election coming up, all they talk about is that stuff, you know, at work. I mean, it's everywhere I go. It'd be one thing if it'd be like you hear it once in a while, but it's like at work, that's all everyone talks about. You hang out with your friends, that's all everyone talks about. Barbershop, that's all they talk about. You go, I mean, it doesn't matter what we're doing.
Wow.
That's all they talk about. And it's just like, I'm just thinking, you know, I mean, I don't know if you notice the same thing, but I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, I just feel like people.
No, I don't have that kind of conversation. I don't hear anybody having that. I'm on the East Coast. I'm assuming you out Midwest somewhere.
Yeah. I'm in Minnesota. It's like a dark blue state up here. So it's,
right.
I don't know, maybe it's different where you are at, but over here, it's like they are going crazy over this political stuff.
All right. Well, you know, if we were in a political fix here, you know, I mean, like they're stirring up a whole lot of things in the pot. You know, bigotry is just one of the issues that's been stirred up. But you know, I mean, racism, bigotry, and it's a whole lot of things is in the pot. That the only thing they're talking about is bigotry? Is that it?
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's the way. Yeah, I mean, like, it's the way that they accuse the other side of it. You get what I'm saying?
Right.
Because they always talk about Republicans.
Black.
Exactly. You know what I mean? It's like both of you are bigots. They don't like your views. You don't like their views. You're both being bigots.
Right.
That's what the word means.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I'm not
right.
saying one's right,
you.
The other's wrong. I'm just saying this is they're all they basically do the exact same thing, but then they complain about when the other one does it. Like I noticed, like for example, when Obama was president, you saw how the Republicans they were acting all crazy, and everything he did was the worst thing ever. And then now you got Democrats when it comes to Trump. They're doing the same thing where they, you know, everything he does is the worst thing ever, no matter what. And nobody's engaging in critical thinking. No one's sitting down and saying, I don't care whether it's Obama or Trump or a Republican or Democrat. I'm just looking at the idea that's being brought to the table and determining whether or not that's good. And I'll give you an example. You got the Trump administration talking about implementing school choice, which would be great for the black community. But then I find black people opposing it just because it's coming from the Trump administration. And that's
really?
The type of nonsense. Yeah, because I'm saying to myself, put aside who it's coming from. The issue at hand is the idea itself. What are the pros and cons? And the pros outweigh the cons. The idea that you're going to oppose that just because it came from Trump, that's idiotic. Like when it came to Obama, I didn't like when Republicans were opposing him on health care when he was trying to deal with a situation to help people with pre-existing conditions or people who couldn't afford health care. And he was trying to come up with some type of solution for it. And I thought a lot of his ideas were great. And if we could have worked together, they could have came with a better solution. But they were just sitting there opposing it just because it came from him. Even though what he was presenting was a Republican plan from the 90s. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
And it's just like this is why our country's in a mess we're in. Because they're not – people are just caught up in my team versus your team versus let's find solutions to fix problems. And if we focus on the solution and the problems – I think we get a long way, man.
Okay, what do you think about just getting every? Wait, go ahead.
I got a question.
Go ahead.
You said they're criticizing Trump for the school of choice option. You saying that's a good option?
Yeah, for the black community, it's a great option.
How is it good?
Well, I mean, I'll give you an example. Basically, what school choice is for those who don't know is when you go to public school. Whether you're a student or your child's going to public school, the federal government gives that school a certain amount of money for each student that's there. So if you're in elementary school, as an example, the federal government will pay $12,000 a year to that school for that student. And if you're in high school, on average, it's around $15,000 a year. Now, what the school choice option is saying is if you're a parent and let's say you can't afford to send your child to a private school or a charter school or whatever, it'll now give you as a parent the option of saying, instead of forced to have to send my kid to a public school, I can then take that $12,000 or $15,000 that the federal government was applying to that school, and I can use them to apply that towards a private school of my choice. You see what I'm saying? And so especially for low-income families in inner-city areas where they got bad public schools, that's a game-changer because now instead of having to send your kid to a bad school, you can now send them to a good private school, a charter school or whatever, and you won't have to pay the tuition. The federal government will pay for you.
Right.
And that's great. You know what I'm saying? And I got two young children right now that are under the age of 5, and they're about to start going to school. And I'd love to be able to send them to, a quality private school that, rather than send them to a bad public school. And I think any parent, no matter who you are, this is a great option, especially for, lower income people, because they oftentimes don't even have the option of going to, a good private school, because a lot of people are stuck in these areas where they have to send their children to bad public schools. And so this would do two things. One, it gives the parents an option. Number two, it forces the public schools to improve, or the parents are going to leave and the students are going to leave and they're going to lose federal funding. You get what I'm saying? Because right now, the public schools, they don't have to be accountable because they know they're going to get that federal money no matter what. So they don't have to try harder. They don't have to care. And that's why we see the degrading level of education in the inner city. So this would have a double effect. I think that would benefit a lot of people, especially us.
Well, my question is, how much does a good charter or private school cost? Is that enough money for that?
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about, most schools, I'm like the most expensive you would get if you're going to like a really, really good one. you're not going to be paying more than, you know, $15,000 to $20,000, and that's like at the top end, you know. So if you if the federal government is offering you for a high school age student $15,000 a year to cover whatever the tuition fee at that school is, that's huge. I mean, that's half of some people's income. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, that's big, and especially when you think about it. Let's just look at Black history. Think about the impact our people had gone through when after World War II, when our people, you know, our men that went to war were supposed to get GI bills to be able to go to college, to get a good education, which then would have put them in a position to get good paying jobs, which a lot of them weren't able to get access to, while the same white soldiers that went to war were able to do that. And that's how a lot of them were able to come back, get good educations, and get, you know, good paying jobs, which is what led to the boom in the middle class we saw that happened during the 50s and 60s. Think right. about that kind of effect for our people now, where you can take young people who are in elementary or high school now, take them out of a poor public school where the teachers don't give a damn. We all know this, where the schools are not really doing what they're supposed to. And our children are in an environment where they're surrounded by negative influence to get involved into drugs and crime and gang activity and all that stuff. We know all those pitfalls that a lot of people in the inner cities get sucked into, especially when they go to school. And you have right. an opportunity to take those children out of that environment, out of those poor schools, put them in a good school where they get a good education, which now allows them to be in a position to be able to go to a good college and be competitive and be in a positive environment where they can be outside of that negative influence. That's right. the kind of thing that will change an entire generation and drastically change the entire line for Black people for that over, you know, 40, 50 years from now. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And so mm-hmm. that's why, to
I mean,
me,
that sounds good. I don't know
ever.
Much about schools.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good idea. So really, basically you're saying they would still have public schools, right? But the parents that wanted mm-hmm. their kids out of there, right? Because I'm assuming that in order for a child from a public school system to go to a private school system, one that might be, say, let's just use a number in terms of education, a degree of education, might be, say, it's 10 times better than the one they was going to. They would have to be able to do that work, wouldn't they? To
yeah, because like yeah,
when
they'd
be able to,
right. Yeah, they'd have to pay for
right,
it themselves.
So,
you know what I'm saying?
Right. They would. Yeah, but I'm saying, but so they would have to be able to, at the fourth grade level, come into the fourth grade at this school, right, where these kids are really learning things. So I'm thinking, because some kids graduate from public school, right? Not all, but
right.
some graduate not being able to read, right?
Yeah.
So what I got? What if I have a child in the fourth grade that is reading at the second grade level? Now he's gonna go to a school where the fourth graders are reading at a 6th to 7th grade level.
Well, I mean, again, the point of it is you have the option, right? It's not like saying
right.
it's not school choice is not saying now you have to send your child there. What this is saying is simply this: all it means is that the $12,000 to $15,000 a year that the federal government is providing for your child's education, you as a parent now have the choice as to where that money's going to go. Get what I'm saying?
No, I'm with you on
so
that.
So now,
yeah, I'm with you on that.
That's all it is. So let's say, for example,
yeah,
your
you
child's
that.
Going to public school, and let's say you uh-huh. like the public school, you like the teachers, you think they're doing a good job, you like the area, you're comfortable with it, that's fine. You can stay there. But
stay
if
there.
You don't like it, I'm saying if you want to, you know what I'm saying? It's if
right.
you're in a public school that you like, you don't have to leave. Your child can continue to go to that school. But let's say if
right.
the opposite is the case, let's say your child is going to a bad public school that you know the teachers aren't doing a good job. There's, you know, whatever reason you as a parent don't feel comfortable with it. Now, whereas before you may not have had the money to be able to send your kid to a charter school or a private school, now you have that option of saying, oh, the money that the federal government is giving to that school, they'll now give it to me and allow me to apply it to a tuition. So now I have that option. And so this
right.
this whole thing
you.
Is designed to help, you know, poor parents who don't have that option, like, you know people
right.
who got money can
yeah.
do it. So, you know what I'm saying? So that's why, to me, the people that will help the most is us. This is not
right.
really necessarily going to help white people or Asians. This is going to help our community more than any other community. And it has the greatest positive impact that can change the next generation completely, more than any civil rights legislation that's been passed. This is bigger than
okay,
all.
Okay, what is
because
what is
yeah.
the name of that legislation? What's the name of that?
School's choice. School choice.
School's choice.
Yeah. It's been
But they shot down or what? You saying they shot it down or just complaining?
Right. Basically, they're fighting against it because the Democrats, their mentality is they're looking out for the interests of the teachers union. And what the teachers unions don't want is this. Teachers unions do not want to be their teachers to be held accountable. They like the current system, which says that if a teacher has what's that term they use?
Tenure.
Tenure. They call it, yeah, tenure. When a teacher gets tenure, that applies for all these public school teachers to where it doesn't matter how good of a, or bad of a job they do, they're going to get paid regardless. And that's why we've seen a lot of inner city schools where these teachers don't even try. Like a lot, and this is documented. This is not my opinion. You can research this. There's been a lot of studies that show that teachers in inner city areas in predominantly black schools oftentimes don't even put anywhere near the same effort that you see from teachers in suburban areas and different areas. So this then gives parents in the inner cities the ability to hold these people accountable and say, if you don't do what we expect, and if you don't teach our children at the same level that's expected of you, then we're going to take our children out and you're going to lose that federal
funding. Right.
And they don't want that. And so you see what I'm saying?
Right.
So what we have going on is, and this isn't a Democrat Republican thing, I'm just being honest. The Democrats are fighting this because the teachers union donates a lot of money to the Democrat Party. And that's why they're fighting against it. And again, like I said, this is before Trump, because this was a big issue going on in the D.C. area while Obama was president. And there was a huge campaign. You can look this up amongst black parents in the D.C. area were pushing hard to get school choice in that city. And they were actually reaching out to Obama and a lot of the black Democratic leadership to join with them and help them do this. And they told them, no, we're not. They just flat out said no. And so, to me, I don't like the fact that you have a certain group of people putting their political interests ahead of the interests of our community.
And
you know what I'm saying?
I agree with that. That's
you feel
that's
me?
Because
my allegiance and your allegiance is to the black community before any political party. And that should be our mindset. I don't care if it's a Democrat or Republican. All I care about is, does it benefit our people? Does it benefit our children? And does it help our future? And if it does that, I don't care who it came from. I want that to help us. That's all. That's my mind. That's why I'm an independent, because I notice that people who are Democrat or Republican, they care more about what their side says versus real solutions to fix actual problems.
Right.
And that's why I feel like if more people were independent, we would get a lot more things done. But we got these Democrats and Republicans fighting each other like it's, you know, like it's the NBA Finals. And it's the Cavs versus the Warriors.
Sandbox,
you know what
mentality.
I'm saying? Yeah.
Yeah,
man, it's ridiculous.
You're right, Donna. You got that. That's right. That's politics nowadays. Has nothing to do with people. Has everything to do with party.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's taxation without representation.
That's
why
we're
the color they are. Right. Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. That's exactly why we're the mess we're in.
I mean, think about it. We take yourself and different people on this line I hear. Most of us got common sense. You know what I'm saying? If you heard this point presented to you about this thing, common sense would say, you know what, that makes sense. I think it would help. We should give it a shot. A common sense person wouldn't say, wait. Who did it come from first? Oh, it came from Trump? Oh, it came from Obama? Okay, I don't want it. That's stupid.
Right.
You know
stupid.
What I'm saying? It's ridiculous.
It's mindless. You're right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm going to research that. I'm going to see what's going on. I'm going to see what's happening with that. We got another call. I'm going to try to get this other call on before we hang up, brother. Just hold on, okay?
All right.
Hello? Caller, welcome to Provocative Thought.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Sorry to keep you waiting. Yes.
No, I was listening to the gentleman speak, and I think one of the things that came to my mind was, I think what happens is some of the I guess poor communities, and maybe you can speak in reference to this. When you apply, I guess, the free choice agenda that you were talking about, and say if I sent my child to one of these schools in one of these suburban areas, does the school system still support the transportation of the child from one community to the other? Like it does now with, you know, some of the public schools and even the charter schools I've seen.
Oh, you mean, do they get bused? Do they get bused if they go the wrong way?
Or does that become the responsibility of the parent who made the choice to transition the child to this other program?
You know, I really don't. Brother, could you answer that question?
Yeah,
do you know anything about that program?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes, ma'am. When you actually, that's a really big good thing, because that's something I looked into in the beginning. And so what they do is part of that federal funding, the money when they send it, like, for example, when the federal government sends it to the schools, the public schools, part of that money covers the cost for transportation. So to run the buses, they get paid for that. Choice program.
Does there need to be a certain percentage of kids leaving that school for them to be bused? Or can it be, can my one child be bused from the neighborhood school to a suburban school?
That's the thing. That's where the option comes in. So what they did is this. It's two parts. If the school that you're sending your child to, right, let's say you send them to a private school, in that federal funding, they allocate money for transportation. So they give two options. Number one option is the school can provide the funding and the federal government will pay them. Or if the parent decides that they're going to do the transportation, the federal money will actually send – the federal government will send you money to pay for your gas cost, like your fuel cost. And so that's really cool. So what they do is basically like – If you as a parent decide I'm going to be the one transporting my child, you just got to keep track of your fuel receipts, and then you send that in, and they actually send you a check to cover that. And so something I checked out early on, and I was like, when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's really good, because that was a good point, because I thought to myself, if you got a poor family living in the inner city and they're sending their kid to a school that's like 20 miles away, you know, I mean, how are we going to make that work? And so I was really happy to hear that they actually put that provision in there specifically for that, so I think that'll work.
What about private schools that have on-campus housing? Can our children be part of those kind of programs and qualify for housing arrangement?
I don't know.
Okay.
I have no idea about that.
Well, the other thing I was thinking about as I listened to your comments, and I guess Carlton had tapped into this earlier, and he made the example of a child that reads on a fourth grade level here in one of the inner city schools, and when he transfers to a school and the fourth graders are reading on a sixth or seventh grade level, I would think that the private school would have to support the child, lack of skill, you know what I'm saying, to help that child. I mean, if it's additional tutoring that's required, is that like an additional piece of funding in the budget to help the child that's transferring from this community to that learning community? You know what I'm saying?
Well,
that's
not his bill. But, you know, we're going to come back on this bill. I'm going to try to do a show just on this bill alone in education, so that we can talk more extensively about that. We have 90 seconds left, y'all. And then, you know, I appreciate you guys calling. And this is a very interesting subject. I would like to revisit it again on the show. Is that all right?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So I want to, you know, I got to close out now because we got like 1 minute left, 2 minutes, 1 minute, 9 seconds. All right. Look, I want to thank you guys for calling in. And stay tuned next week. Give me two weeks to revisit this show. And, thanks for calling in. Thanks for listening in. Thank you, Mr. Jones, for allowing me to host the show.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox and Four Parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Deport from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.